In this episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, custom RTX 2080 goodness, Spectre Folio Leather Luxury, LG's V40-something, it's the new 30, I think. Origin of Max-Q Gaming Laptops is with us, and what's in your wallet, or on your bench, as the case may be, next. Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks. No, I'm not Samuel L. Jackson on some credit card commercial. I'm Dave Altavilla. And this is the podcast for hothardware.com, where we like to kick around all things tech. And I'm with, of course, my favorite tech friends. Well, two of my favorite. I have many, but these guys are like way top of the list. Marco Cipetta and Chris Getting. Gentlemen, how the hell are we today?
Doing good. Can't complain. Freshly showered, freshly shaved. Got some work done today. Podcasting with my buddies. So I guess things are good.
You're fresh. Fresh as a daisy. Chris, are you fresh up there in God's country?
I'm doing good. I've got a new to me local beer, Marsh Island Brewing Coloss, which is a double dry hop, double IPA.
Oh,
big,
Coloss.
Big grapefruity front end. Lots of flavor.
New England style IPA, eh?
Mm-hmm.
I am drinking I'm drinking the Wachusett Wally, or excuse me, Larry. This is the other Wachusett beer that I favorite very much. Wachusett Larry, this is a double as well from Mount Wachusett, where you can go skiing only an hour away from where I exist here in Massachusetts.
Well, there you go.
Yes, it's a beautiful area. And we're getting to a beautiful time of year up here in the Northeast. We're beginning to hit leaf peeping season, right, guys? Do you leaf peep?
Look out my window.
You can't. I can't see it. I can't.
There we go.
Got to turn your camera or something. Hey, so let's kick around some tech, because we've got a few headlines that have been breaking these days. We've been busy as heck. We missed you last week. Too much going on, a little bit of travel for sure, but the launches keep coming, and we've got all kinds of stuff to talk about today, from Nvidia to Microsoft to HP to you name it. Big names. Fire off questions in the chat if you would, because we'd love to answer them for you if you have questions. And but let's dive right in.
If you just want to make rude comments, that's cool too.
Rude comments aren't cool. I want friendly, nice comments where, you know, complimentary would be good actually as well. Okay. No. You can say whatever you like, as long as it's not foul and mean, because we don't like mean people. So let's move on to the headlines and the reviews that we've been stepping through last week or so at Hot Hardware, and there's lots going on. Marco's been diving headlong into all things NVIDIA RTX or Turing, and has been looking at some of the OEM cards, not the Founders Edition cards, but the brand name OEMs, from Asus to EVGA to MSI and so on, and more recently looked at the Asus GeForce RTX 2080 ROG Strix Gaming OC. Could your name get any longer? Graphics card. Marco, what do you think about that thing?
Yeah, it could get longer because it's the OC edition.
Oh.
Yeah, so if you come by the site, we've already covered the Founders Edition, EVGA's XC Ultra card, MSI's Gaming Trio card. Those are all in the launch piece. And it arrived shortly after NVIDIA's launch, but we got our hands on the Asus card. And this is a killer RTX 2080. So if you were to kind of think of all the features an enthusiast wants, you know, a beefy cooler, you know, a heavy duty, you know, power array, additional power feeds for overclocking, RGB lighting that's fully customizable, additional headers for fan and more LEDs, plenty of outputs, it's quiet, it's cool, it's overclockable. This card basically has all of that. So, you know,
margaritas.
It doesn't make margaritas. It's in a 12-step program, so we really shouldn't even talk about alcohol around it. But it's, you know, underneath it all, it's an RTX 2080, just like NVIDIA's Founders Edition. But Asus overclocks the card, sort of in two ways. Now, the base clock's the same. The memory clock is the same as NVIDIA's reference spec, but the boost clock out of the box goes to 1860 megahertz. Now, with ASUS's software, there's also an overclock mode that takes it up to 1890, but you're talking about a fraction of a difference. And if you overclock manually, which is what I think most people would do, you're either going to run it out of the box and get to 1860, or you're going to really push it and overclock manually. This was the first card that I was able to hit 2.1 gigahertz on the GPU core. So overclockable card. And the limit was the power limit. NVIDIA's kind of set power limits on these cards. So without some modding and extreme cooling, you're not going to get in much higher than that. But yeah, you know, out of the box, very overclockable. Performance was better than a Founders Edition across the board, as you'd expect. And it was sort of neck and neck with the MSI card, which has the same boost clock. About the only two things that I would take issue with this card is I'm not a huge fan of these triple slot coolers. I know multiple GPUs are less popular now, but sacrificing three slots is a lot. And it's kind of pricey. It's $870 on Amazon for this card.
Gotcha. So yeah, I guess when I look at a card like that, and that's an impressive looking card, looks really well designed. ASUS makes some good stuff. No question about it. They're one of the top OEMs out there for add-in board partners or for motherboards, when it comes to graphics or PC platform stuff in general. But is a triple slot cooler like that with the advantages of it, you know, the extra bulk and the sheer mass area volume of extra cooling apparatus, is it worth consuming that extra space in your chassis, in your opinion? Be honest now, Marco.
is it worth it? Yeah. Like if the vast majority of people are running a single graphics card and a smaller and smaller percentage of people are adding in sound cards, if you look at the average system at a LAN party or the average enthusiast system, the GPU might be the only card in it. You know, maybe they have some sort of, you know, capture card, whatever. But if you don't need the slots, yeah, you might as well get that big cooler. Just to give you a quick example of what that big cooler does, while overclocked, and when I captured the data for the review, I probably had been running the card like 2 hours straight, just during overclocking, not including the previous, you know, regular clock tests. The GPU temp maxed at 70. So like that cooler works extremely well. And I should also mention there's a switch on the card. In performance mode, the fans spin all the time. There's a quiet mode also where the fans actually shut off while idling, or I believe while it's below 50 degrees. I don't remember the threshold, but it's dead silent. But even in performance mode, you can't hear the card above the typical power supply or air-cooled CPU, so it's quiet anyway. So, yeah, I mean, if you don't need the slots, you might as well get the beefy cooler and keep that thing quiet.
What did you see for, and I don't know if you, I know you mentioned this briefly, but what did you see for headroom and overclocking with that cooler? Does Turing, I mean, obviously running at 70C under load, nominally out of the box, that's pretty chill. Does Turing have some headroom with a little bit extra voltage applied to it or what have you?
Yeah, so I didn't go curve. I didn't go nuts. I maxed the power and temperature target, and I turned up the voltage as far as it would go. It's only 0.1 volts. But yeah, this was the first card that did 2.1 gigahertz. So from 1860 out of the box overclock all the way up to 2.1 gigahertz on the GPU.
Nice. Would you recommend it over a Founders Edition card at this point? It's a little premium.
I don't know. Like the thing with it that I like about the Founders Edition is it's not affordable. It's slightly lower priced than this, and it's only two slot. So I don't know. I mean, if you want the additional features ASUS throws in, you can see why there's a premium, you know, with the mode switches, the extra RGB, the bigger cooler, it's quieter. Like there's lots of stuff you can argue to justify that price. But if I was spending my money, I'd probably buy the most affordable one I could find and overclock it manually anyway. That's me.
Right. I mean, just looking at the performance graphs, even overclocking you know, you're seeing maybe a 5, maybe 10% pickup in performance over just the reference 2080. So how much extra you want to spend for that 5-10% is going to be up to you.
You know, and there's also something cool about having the same brand everything in a system. Like, I'm going to build myself a new system, and I have these 2080s on hand now, but I'm going to build a Threadripper, and in my twisted mind, I want an AMD graphics card in there. So, like, it's just, it'd be nice if you had an all-ASUS system. It's just a, you know, a good-looking card and have that same theme throughout with your, you know, a ROG motherboard, a ROG graphics card. It's just something to consider.
Yeah, yeah. Is what do you think about the potential for Turing, you know, moving forward? And we've talked about this, you know, previously, and we'll just touch on it real quick and then move on to the next one here. But 800 and change, right, for this graphics card. Is it 850, right. 835, something like that?
870-ish for that one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. For the average enthusiast, that where I guess budget is a concern, but it's not a crazy concern. It's you know, let's be reasonable, but we've got money to burn. We're always looking for the next upgrade. Is this first round, or is this first crop of Turing cards, are they worth the investment, in your opinion? Or are we more betting on the come that ray tracing and DLSS and other features of Turing are gonna pay off down the road?
So that's just two questions. All right. Now, yeah, in terms of if it's worth it,
sorry,
it really depends. It depends where you're coming from, right? If you have a 1080 Ti, you're probably looking at the numbers going, I definitely is not worth grabbing one of these, right? If you have a previous gen card and you were considering a 1080 Ti, though, it doesn't make sense buying a 1080 Ti anymore, because this card is just as fast and you have all those forward-looking features. So it really depends on where you're coming from. Pricing is relatively high, and NVIDIA didn't really drop the price of Pascal much at all. And because they're clearly the leader at the high end, they can sort of do what they want. And there is a premium on these cards. But NVIDIA did innovate. These are the fastest GPUs you can get. They have features not available anywhere else that could in the future pay off if game developers support the tech. But I think they're going to. They also have to remember they'll probably be really strong with DXR, Microsoft's ray tracing technology. And I was actually trying to work out something the other day, and I couldn't do the math properly because the die shot wasn't clear enough. But I wanted to come up with sort of an equation to see how much NVIDIA bet of their die. How big was the bet on the RT cores and the Tensor cores in that silicon? Yeah. And it's something like 40% of the chip is that stuff. You know, or 30 to 40% are Tensor or RT cores. They're not going to bet that without having, you know, confidence that it's going to be supported. So I think yes, the RTX, RT cores, Tensor cores, DLSS, it's all going to pay off long term.
I appreciate you bringing up that point, because that's what occurred to me with this whole thing was, you know, you can see R&D expenditure, you can, you know, for next generation features to support ray tracing and this other stuff. You can see investment in other areas, software, what have you. But to bet silicon area, a large chunk of silicon area, 40% roughly, or whatever that number is, it's a significant chunk of the design. To bet silicon area is huge money. You know, when you talk about, especially when you talk about a GPU with a die size that, you know, that as big as GPUs are, they're very complex. They take tons of silicon area, and they take a big chunk of a wafer. You have yield loss in any of these designs, and it costs big money. And it's why GPUs are expensive, frankly, because they just eat silicon. They're not small chips. So when you bet that much silicon real estate, You got to be pretty sure of your convictions. You have to, that bet is going to be a pretty good payoff ratio going on, and not as much risk as perhaps we might see as consumers from a, you know, when you're looking at the price going, and I don't have ray tracing right now in games. I don't have DLSS right now in games. You would think that bet should pay off sooner than later.
And right? Don't forget,
Chris, I hear you ready to chime in. Yeah.
NVIDIA and developers aren't existing in separate vacuums. I can guarantee you there's a lot of crosstalk, a lot of crosswork between NVIDIA and different developer studios to make sure that the tech is being put to use. So, you know, it's not going to reach every developer studio, of course, right away, but they're trying to get that kind of initial critical mass out there to make it the must-have technology in games, the new look, the new thing to flex on, to get that ball rolling for their future tech. I guarantee you that's there.
Sure. We'll have to see. Time will tell if NVIDIA's investment was a wise one in silicon, in hard silicon. John Sugar says, or asks, I should say. Well, actually, he's making a comment. I take that back. Most attractive thing about those three slots coolers, from my point of view, is that they're much quieter, not the extra overclocking headroom. And yeah, that is. There's one thing that's nice about big fans and big heatsink surface area, and that's quieter temperatures. So good observation, John. We'll take it. If you like a quiet rig, go for something a little bit bigger and more bodacious, like the Asus our GeForce RTX 2080 ROG Strix Gaming OC Edition. Too many words. Okay. Let's move on, because I'm speaking too many words. And let's talk about something that Chris has been eyeballing, and I also took a little bit of time to spend poring over it as well. Origin Systems, Origin PC, is a boutique gaming PC system builder and integrator. And they are now into laptops, and they've got the Evo 15S, a thin and powerful NVIDIA Max-Q laptop for gaming on the go. There it is, 15-inch machine. And it is Max-Q design, so thin and light, relatively speaking, but rocking a GeForce GTX now, 1070. What do you know, Chris?
Yeah, so, it was the other Chris who wrote the review, but,
yes.
That doesn't mean that I don't like what I'm seeing here, because as you know, I like my thin and light laptops as much as I can get. I don't want a lot of bulk, so anything towards that SPF 15 Razer Blade kind of look that's keeping it thin rather than the huge tank gaming laptops that we saw for years and years makes me very, very happy. This Origin system looks absolutely beautiful to me. Again, it's keeping thin. Let's see if we can get the exact height, 0.7 inches, well under an inch thick. So it's something you actually want to take with you, which is a huge purpose, in my opinion, of having a laptop. So as far as the system that we took a look at, so this one's packing an i7-8750H, which is their hex core i7, 6 cores, 12 threads. And it is paired, as you said, with the GTX 1070 Max-Q. So there's a lot of power under that hood, especially with the 16 gigs of RAM and half terabyte NVMe SSD. So, all the performance you could want is there in this machine for all your gaming on the go. It is... From what I could see at CES when I was with the Origin booth, their laptops are very well built. So no real concerns about build quality there. The only thing we noticed is that the hotspot that develops under load is kind of under the WASD keys. So, you may want to take a little caution there, but I don't think it's anything that's going to make it too uncomfortable to play. What I really like that Origin does to make their laptops unique is you can get it with their, their custom screening process. I forget the name they have for that. That's almost like a 2.5D texture to it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Paint. Yeah. They have a paint system. Yeah.
I forget. They have a term for it. It's escaping me right now, but it is a really cool technology to make it more unique and more personalized. And when you're spending upwards of $2,000 on a laptop, you can kind of add your own personality to it and make it your own. Which is nice.
Yeah. No, it's actually a pretty cool, if you hit page 2, John, I don't know if you can bring that up. They're showing the system. There you go. So there's a custom red, black, and gray paint job that they will send out. And that's what you get from these boutique builders, is that this is an orderable semi-custom look. So they will paint that machine. It's high grade paint that stands up to wear and tear. And, you know, you can pick, I think there's, in this case, for this pattern, there's multiple different hues. That happens to be red, but I think there's blue and there's green and there's a few others. And then you can actually send them your logo as well. If you have your own logo you want to add to it, maybe it's a brand logo or your company logo, and you want to have them silk screen it on there as well, they will do that. And so they'll custom paint the lid on that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the machine is the machine's pretty stout. I mean, it's, you know, you've got we looked at the 1080p display, but you can configure all the way up to a 4K display. We looked at the 1080p 144 hertz high refresh configuration, 15.6 inch display, plenty bright. And you know, the nice thing is when you're looking at 1080p gaming on a machine with a 1070 and a 6-core under the hood, you know, you're talking pretty much anything ultra image quality, you know, max settings, this mm-hmm. machine's gonna play it.
Yeah, it's very not well gonna balanced.
Yeah, it's not gonna give you big battery life. And that was probably, I think, one of the shortcomings that Chris Ladishin, excuse if I'm butchering his name, on our staff, what he found was that battery life with a 55 watt hour battery was a little on the soft side, but that's to be mm-hmm. expected with this kind of horsepower under the hood. If you're watching videos,
especially this thing.
Yeah, if you're watching videos, it's going to switch into hybrid graphics mode and run off the Intel integrated graphics or something light duty like that. But when gaming, yeah, you're not going to be far from a wall outlet. That's just the way it goes. But yeah, I mean, 1080p high image quality, you know, actually Shadow of Mordor on high image quality 1080p, 140 frames per second. So it's actually pushing the max frame rate of, or I should say refresh rate of the monitor. So Tomb Raider, same thing, high image quality at 120 frames per second, you know, at 1080p. I think Tomb Raider is very high as the top setting. If you push that up, maybe it'd be down around 100 frames per second. Still, that's great horsepower for 1080p gaming. Mm-hmm. What other things can we say about it? It was missing a Thunderbolt port.
Oh, yeah.
So external graphics would be kind of, it's a bit of a bummer, but when you think about a 1070 under the hood, are you going to really care? Probably not.
Right.
Yeah. HDMI output. So you could game on the big screen if you want, right? Does it have HDMI? I think it does. Yeah.
Let's take it back. It's got an HDMI out.
And mini display port, so you can drive, you know, a high res monitor if you want as well. So really, you know, dock this thing up if you like, and it is a desktop replacement at well under 5 pounds, 4.3 pounds to be exact.
Yep, that's carry with you weight.
That's carry with you weight with desktop replacement horsepower. Oh, and there's some gremlins running behind Marco. I think that's what that sounded sure. like.
You sure are.
That's funny stuff. Well, that's Origin PC. Check those guys out. Check out our full review. Impressive system. Marco, is this your kind of beast, or are you still, do you like to game on the desktop and don't think about gaming on notebooks?
I like to game on a desktop and really don't think about gaming on notebooks.
A lot of folks do, and what's interesting is it is a hot segment. I mean, gaming notebooks, you know, when we post up the reviews on YouTube or at Hot Hardware, the eyeball traffic is significant. And what's impressive about this machine is, you know, as the machines have evolved, is that we are now getting away from the boat anchor gaming laptop. It doesn't have to be 10 pounds anymore. It can be, mm-hmm. you know, well under 5 pounds and still get the job done. So
you can bring it to work. You can bring it to class. You know, you can do other things with it, but still have that power with you. Take it out to lunch and game with your friends, have a mini LAN party, whatever, what have you. You know, there definitely is a huge market there for the gaming laptops, and it's nice to see them getting thinner so that you can actually want to bring them around, as I said. But, you know,
yeah,
when we're old and don't have friends, then I guess it's not so appealing to us.
I think I'm at that stage where if I'm on the go, I want the thinnest, lightest machine I can. And when I have time to game, I want the best experience possible, which means big screen, loudspeakers, what have you. So, you know, big keyboard, yeah, good mouse.
Some folks don't have that luxury. And, you know, for example, the average college student, you don't have room for a desktop, but you need a notebook to take the class as well. You don't have the budget to have both. So college students are a perfect example where this machine would do well. This, you're talking 3+ hours of battery life, untethered for light duty workloads, you know, call it 3 to 4 hours. And, you know, so taking that to class, hitting a few classes during the day, no problem. Get back to your dorm. If you want to game at night, bang, plug it in. Now you've got gaming horsepower as well. So good stuff. Check it out. The Origin Evo 15S. Let's move on to something that Marco's a little bit more fond of on the go. And that's something he actually saw on the go in New York. The HP Spectre Folio. From the good folks at Hewlett Packard. There it is there, the leather-clad wonder, a super thin and light premium 2-in-1 device. Marco, what do you know? You saw that thing in the flesh, huh?
So, yeah, this thing's pretty wild. I was at the launch in New York with HP, and I got my hands on it, and I got a tour of it, and I got to look at all the internals. It's an interesting device, right? If you look at something like the Surface Pro, right, some of the detachable 2-in-1s that are out there, in my opinion, the worst thing about them is that they're kind of floppy when you use them on your lap, right? And that's just a side effect of them being detachable and having the kickstand. So if you wanted all of basically the same features of a Surface Pro, but were willing to give up the detachable keyboard, you sort of get the same form factor, the ability to flip it down and around, or to have a kickstand. You have this nice leather textured exterior and a really beautiful build with, you know, latest 8th gen Intel hardware. So you see, you can have it as a clamshell. You can slide it forward and have it basically in what's like a stand mode. You can drop it down like a tablet. It has the pen. So, you know, you basically have all of the features except the fully detachable keyboard. And that fully detachable keyboard is what I don't like about some of the convertibles. So I wouldn't mind it. In terms of the overall aesthetic, I think the Spectre Folio is a beautiful machine. I'm just not certain how that leather around the hinge is going to hold up over time.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. Tell me something about the hinge, and then we'll talk about the leather surface as well. The hinge itself, I noticed when the guy was demoing it there, How does that feel? It looked really precise. So sliding into that tent mode or stand mode, I should say, and then into tablet mode and from the previous notebook mode, it snapped right in. Is that firm? Is it clean?
It's firm and really smooth. It's actually particularly firm. I shot some B-roll. I was trying to one-hand it because I had the camera in one hand and manipulating the machine in the other. And if I closed it, I couldn't open it with one hand. That hinge is so strong. But the movement, so there's two hinges. There's the main clamshell hinge. Then there's the one at the back of the screen that's kind of right in the middle of the leather there. They're both really buttery smooth. They both have some rigidity there. Like, it does require some force to move it. But I think the combination of that metal interior frame, and the leather is bonded. That's not a cover that just comes off the machine. Like, the leather is part of the build. It's kind of hard to explain, but the chassis is bonded to that leather. It's not just something that's slipped on there. So having basically the leather hinge wrapped around the metal hinge results in some really, you know, rigid feeling machine, despite how thin it is.
Huh? What do you think? And Chris, I think you might want to jump in here. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But what do you think the lapability is like? And you know what I mean by lapability, because that's what the issue you have with the Surface devices, right? Some of the Surface
devices. Yeah. So it's just like any other clamshell. So lapability should be perfectly fine. That's okay. The thing that I like about it. So you get that tiny form factor without sacrificing lappability. That really the only thing you sacrifice versus a Surface Pro is being able to remove the keyboard.
Right.
Otherwise, you can set it up basically in any other mode just like that.
And yeah, so, and then the commitment to leather, I mean, it looks great when it's new. The commitment to leather is what scares me as well. Did HP talk about any sort of finishing they put on the leather to preserve it?
Not specifically about preservation. The most concerning part to me is if you look at the main clamshell hinge, the hinge is recessed within the leather. So around the loop, around the curve, the leather is sticking out and exposed, right? So it makes it look great and look like a leather folio, you know, which is where it gets its name. But those edges, I'm really not confident that they're going to hold up over time. If just those edges were recessed into the metal, whereas the leather wasn't the outside leading edge, I think it'd be fine. But with that leather all the way on the outside, going to be rubbing against everything from all angles, I'd have to see how well it holds up. But that's the only part that, like, if I had a laptop 3 months in and taken it in and out of my bag, it has a different color because the leather frayed, I would be angry. So
that's, and that's what I was thinking was, what kind of durability are we looking for? The average laptop is probably 3 to 4 years, maybe 5 years at the most. It's got to last that long. And if it does wear, it's got to wear well, like a baseball glove that looks good with a little wear on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. A real leather wear.
Yeah, real leather wear, which I don't know. Is it pleather or leather?
They said leather. I mean, I assume it's leather. But the question, I think it will last as long as any other notebook, is whether it wears well is the question. And I think most of it would. I have one of those pink ASUS leather notebooks that they made. It has to be 10 years ago. My wife has it. Still looks perfectly fine. Doesn't get used a ton, but that still looks fine. I think it'll be okay. It's just, I don't think it's going to look the same, a year in as it does the day you buy it.
Chris, would you get some nappy Naga hide polish and keep your notebook fresh? leather notebook.
I mean, I probably wouldn't be getting this myself just because I can be a little more abusive on devices. But if you're an executive that's just dragging it out for meetings or something like that, you know, we can give a nice look. Maybe you're not putting the wear and tear on it that we would. But speaking of wear and tear, I know we had some remarks about it being sturdy. But we do have a comment from John Sugar saying that the screen looks super thin, but is it sturdy enough in your opinion? So are you going to snap it?
I don't think you would. What's really the screen itself is super thin. It's the actual glass is only 2 millimeter. If you watch the video, it actually holds it up separately so you can see just how thin the glass is. So you have a 2 millimeter panel, but that's attached to an aluminum magnesium alloy frame, which is then attached. Like I said, it's not just slipped on there. It's bonded to that leather. Mm-hmm. So in moving it, it was pretty rigid. Like, it did not feel flimsy or wobbly at all, in my opinion. So I think it's sturdy enough. Like I said, the only concern is how well that leather wears over time. Mm-hmm.
And if it wears attractively, I don't think it's an issue. I mean, the if you have a good leather and it has that natural kind of wear and tear, it can actually, you know, create a very nice look to it. But we don't know until it happens.
There's a difference between patina and crap. Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. But yeah, no, it's an interesting machine, and you know, kudos to HP for sort of stepping out beyond the normal conventions. You know, you saw a little bit of that with some of Microsoft's Surface products, and some of what they did with the keyboard and the Alacra, I think, is the material they used. Interesting stuff, impressive stuff from HP. We will look forward to reviewing that when it comes out. And then, of course, we'll be tapping on HP's shoulder. If you're watching HP, looking for review units soon. So send it on over and we'll take good care of it. Let's stay in the notebook vein And then we'll finish up with Marco's review and view of something that just posted minutes before we went live. But let's talk about Microsoft's. I just spoke of Microsoft Surface products. Let's talk about Microsoft launches Surface Laptop 2, Surface Pro 6 with 8th Gen Core, and Surface Studio. That was an announcement this week out of New York, I believe, is where they held this event. And we actually have some coverage up of it. It's a redesign from an internal standpoint, not much in terms of mechanical or physical redesign, with the exception of a new color, which is a matte black, which is kind of hot. I like it. But some new internal hardware across the board, upgrading to Intel 8th Gen. Chris, what do you know, man?
Yeah, so kind of the same story, but obviously revamped inside. There's not a lot new that we're seeing from it. And, you know, it's the same form factor, the same sort of specs as far as dimensions and weight and all of that. They are saying that because of the new 8th Gen chips, you could see up to 13 and a half hours of battery life on the new Surface Pro, with up to a 67% uplift in processing power. Of course, we'd have to see benchmarks and all that to see how it really plays out. But a lot of that's just from the jump to the 8th Gen chips, providing more cores. So they're now up to a quad core now instead of a dual core hyper-threaded kind of situation. And yeah, the matte black look is very nice. Black look goes with everything, so no complaints there.
Yeah, interesting that this machine upgraded with Intel 8th Gen and the entire platform that goes with it does not include USB-C connectivity. I don't know why that is. That's like, wow, who thought that was a good idea?
And that is very questionable. You know, we saw with the Origin PC, you know, it didn't have the Thunderbolt connectivity in its USB-C. But to not have USB-C at all in current year is pretty surprising.
Is it? Hang on one second. I noticed that. I'm noticing this in the specs. We should verify this to make sure we're right. Marco, I don't know. Can you run that down while we talk about this a little bit more? Because it may be Thunderbolt that isn't included, and there's a USB-C port on here, 3.1 enabled versus Thunderbolt. So we're gonna Marco, run that down if you would, and let's talk about the Surface Laptop I don't want to speak out of turn that, but that's like the hackles of the back of my neck are sitting up.
Right. And to be clear, the Surface Go and the Surface Book 2 do have USB-C. It's the Surface Laptop 2 and the Surface Pro 6 that we're looking at that don't have the USB-C.
Yeah. How can you?
Yeah. The Surface Pro 6 has one full-size USB 3, and the Surface Laptop 2, I'm on Microsoft's site, so unless they have it wrong, it also lists one full-size USB 3. So, yep.
Yeah. No John C connector, period.
Right. John, again, in the chat is asking, is there a licensing fee for Thunderbolt? And I want to say, yes, there is.
There's also a chip involved, so if people don't want to spend the money, it's not going to be in there.
Even if it was USB-C 3.1 enabled,
it looks like Intel is making Thunderbolt 3 royalty free, so I don't think the licensing cost is in there, but definitely the chip side.
Do you guys want a Microsoft's incredibly negative opinion of this launch?
Yes, I do. Actually, because I'm starting to scratch my head myself. I'm like, what's up?
So you guys I've been Microsoft through and through for years. I was like the last holdout on Windows Phone. Like I had, you guys know me and Microsoft, right? Yeah. This particular launch, my first thought was, let's use a CPU that's about to be replaced and not update the design. They officially don't care. It's like, make it black and let's use a CPU that's about to get replaced by a ninth gen. yay. You know?
Well, okay. I'm going to give him a pass. I'm going to give him a pass on the ninth gen, only because it does take time for validation. Who knows when?
Engineering.
Yeah. Who knows when Intel's next generation chip? You know, but for me, IO connectivity is like inexcusable. You need IO. You need to have the latest IO connectivity options because people are now migrating. My phone is USB-C exclusive now. And so it's just like, what? Who thought of that? Go ahead.
My gut and prediction is this is strictly a holiday play to have something new for the holidays. And sooner rather than later, there'll be newer Surface devices.
Oh,
you know, with different chassis that have the other ports and stuff like that, you know?
And I feel like with the Surface devices across the lineup, they have you either love the Surface look or you don't like it. So, you know, it is kind of polarizing with, you know, its layout, its feel, the way you work with it, especially when you have the detachable models, et cetera. So, you know, it is kind of a different market than your regular Ultrabook or, you know, your MacBook user kind of deal. So they're a little beat of their own drum, but.
Yeah. Interesting. I think you're right. I think they're milking this design. I think it was John in the chat that said there's a little bit of milking going on. And then, you know, when it comes to the Surface Pro and the laptop, yeah, you could have brought a little bit more in terms of innovation here. What is interesting though, actually, if we skip down to the Surface Studio 2. Now they've done some things here, but I want to know what the specs are because they didn't say what processors were under the hood. And they say it's the most powerful Surface ever, and brings along with it NVIDIA Pascal GPUs. But we don't know if it's Kaby Lake or Coffee Lake that's under the hood, except now you've got a much brighter, 38% brighter, 500 nits plus display.
So, can I jump in?
Yeah, please.
The reason they don't say is because it's only seventh gen in there.
Yeah.
So that was a concern when the first one launched, and I'm sure they didn't like a headline I put. So Dave and I also pushed some of our stuff out to some other publications, and I had a headline out there that said about the original Studio. I think my headline was, Microsoft wants you to buy yesterday's tech tomorrow because it had Skylake in it when seventh gen was out. Now you have seventh gen in here when ninth gen's about to come out. And I know what you guys are saying about validation, but come on.
Yeah. No, they're behind the curve.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, they're behind the curve. When ecosystem partners, when you talk about ecosystem partners, the Windows platform partners that are out there, whether it be Dell, HP, Lenovo, what have you, when they're all on eighth gen for all of their devices, everything. I mean, Dell's done a complete top to bottom refresh almost on eighth gen. I don't know. I don't know a Dell notebook product that doesn't have it. Yeah. What's up, Microsoft? Are you setting the bar for just industrial design or the whole thing? Or I don't know.
And I can even overlook it from an engineering standpoint when you're in those Ultrabook or tablet kind of form factors where you've got very tiny little space. But when you have something like a all-in-one unit, I mean, thermals aren't so much of a concern. But also, especially with the Surface Studio, it's being targeted at creators, whether it's photo editing, video editing, or digital media, you know, drawing, etc. You need horsepower for that. So to be effectively, you know, a generation and a half behind coming up on ninth gen, it is more inexcusable.
Well, you know, it takes a lot to make us grumpy, gentlemen, but I think we're officially grumpy on this. I mean, really, it's like, you know, generally,
come on, as Microsoft.
You said, well, as you said, Marco, you are a Microsoft, generally tend to be Microsoft pro Microsoft. You like what they're doing with the platform. I tend to be as well. One thing's for sure, I am impressed with what Satya Nadella has done with that company, the turnaround they have made, and where they are today versus where they were before he started. I mean, it's just right. impressive. But this is kind of like meh.
So the problem with what you see here is the Surface line, the entire lineup, right? Whatever category they entered, it was originally to light a fire under the pants of the other, because we had a bunch of crappy mm-hmm. machines until yeah. Microsoft said, you know what, we're going to make the machines Windows 10, or, you know, I guess Windows 8 was the spark that sort of started it, but we're going to make the machines Windows should be on and push everybody else to make their stuff better. And that yeah. happened, but now Microsoft is not pushing anymore. So
yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't drop the baton, Microsoft. Wake up.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on. And we'll finish up with something mobile, unless Chris, you had anything else to add on piling on to Microsoft before we move on. I'm sorry.
I'm good with Microsoft. I do have more to add before we're done, though.
But okay, good. Go ahead. Go ahead. All right.
Go on with your V40.
Oh, yeah. All right. Sure. So let's talk about the V40. LG, we just got through launching it, just announced and I should say went live with the full review embargo lift on the LG V40 ThinQ Android smartphone. And it is a powerful feature-packed multi-camera beast, 6.4-inch beast, so not a small device. Marco has spent quality time with it under much duress of deadline embargo review process. What do you think there, buddy? What do you think?
I like it. So if you here it is. Let me hold it up. I'm probably going to blow out the camera here, but let's hold it up. That is the LG V40 ThinQ. That's the guy. So Android flagship, right along the lines of all the others that are out there. Qualcomm Snapdragon 845, 6 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs internal storage, but expandable with micro SD, IP68 water dust resistant, beautiful OLED Quad HD Plus display protected by Corning Gorilla Glass. Tiny bezels, you name the feature, it's on here. Some of the standouts are this new, let me see if I can show it well, triple cameras on the back. So you have a standard 12 megapixel shooter, a wide angle, and a telephoto. And what's really cool is in the camera app, you can actually show what's being picked up by each camera in one display and just pick which one you want and capture. So you don't have to flip between cameras. The screen is also really, really, really nice screen. I wouldn't put it up there with the Note 9, but high-end OLED display. It's actually higher resolution than the Note 9. And something I think LG gets the design right. So even though it's a 6.4-inch display, let me hold up a Note 8 and show you, like, it's significantly smaller than a Note 8. It's smaller, thinner, and not as tall, despite having, you know, a 6.4-inch screen. And that's because there's like no bezel anywhere. It's super tiny. You know, the bezels are ultra thin, just really attractive phone. You also have really good audio out of an LG device. It has front firing and bottom firing speakers with their hi-fi quad DAC technology, dual selfie cameras as well, fingerprint sensor. About the two things that I really didn't like the most about it. Let me see if this shows on camera. This thing is a fingerprint magnet. Look at that. Wait, hold on. Let me get that angle back. Look at the fingerprints on this thing. I'm a greasy Italian guy, right? So I leave fingerprints, but this thing is nuts. It's super fingerprint covered. And this back, like, it's composite, so you have wireless charging capabilities, but this is the only part that doesn't feel premium. It feels plasticky, where the rest of the phone just feels super ultra premium. Other than that, though, really, really strong device.
LG does a nice job of optimizing display area for sure. I think as far as notched phones go, and you know, there is a notch on that one. They do a good job with giving you notch control, and you know, you can eliminate the notch. And when you do, the bezel at the top is as thin as it is going to get for you know, a notchless look. And so, yeah, they do.
Jump back to me for a second. So yeah. If you're on the home screen, screen. Let me center it the right way.
That makes a lot of use. Yeah.
So go ahead. No notch. If I open an app, am I touching the right spot? I can't see where I'm touching. Hold on. All right. No notch. Looks smooth. You can't see it. Open an app and boom, notch. You know, but then you get other data up there. So it's about as good as you're going to get a notch to function.
Well, you know what? Actually, I would argue that, boy, did that blow out the screen. I would argue that I run, this is the OnePlus 6, and they have notch control. And when you set it up, I have it in notch mode right now, but when you set it up to go notchless, it puts that black strip across the camera array and gives you an even contiguous look no matter what. No matter what app you're in, it doesn't give
you a notch. Oh, no, you can do that too. You can do that too. You can do that. Just right now, it's not set that way.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, that's good. That's good that, you know, because if you don't like a notch, you don't like a notch. I personally don't mind it, but some folks are dead set against it. What was the software like? So LG can sometimes be a little heavy, but it depends. It depends on the device and the version of their what is the UI? I forget what they call it over Android.
Yeah, I forget what they call their particular. It's actually very thinly skinned. It is very clean. It's not pure Android. There are accommodations for the audio, the extra features for the triple camera, but generally LG gets out of the way. It's fairly close to an unmolested Android installation. I don't think anyone would look at it and say, "Oh man, LG really skinned the crap out of this." It's definitely not the case. It's the software installation is good on the phone.
One thing I will say about LG phones and the audio setup, they talk about that quad hi-fi DAC. That is no joke. You think it, you know, you look at it and you see it in the specs and you think it's just a, you know, a checkbox marketing feature. It's not. You put in a good set of buds and you can hear a much better dynamic range, a notable dynamic range improvement. Better spatialization. You need good buds though. Like I'm an earbud snob. I use Bose IE2s and I don't like many other headphones as a result of it because they're just better, I think, than many things, you know, acoustically in the market. Yeah.
So even the boombox feature on here, this thing's insanely loud. What I'm gonna do, I don't know how well it's gonna come across, but I'm just gonna start a random YouTube video and turn the volume up. This thing is nuts. To seamlessly blend story with action. Like it's loud. Let's go quick. Like it, because it's got dual speakers with the chamber for, you know, some bass, but it's really loud.
Oh, it's got stereo speakers.
Also,
nice.
Does it also get quiet?
What do you mean?
That's the thing. If you're, you know, trying to listen to a video quietly on minimum volume, is it going to be disturbing the people around you? Because that's one thing you see. Okay, so it's
louder than other phones I've tested. But no, if you turn it low at the lowest, it's still just a whisper. It's just when you crank it, you can actually fill a room with audio from that thing.
Yeah. That's nice. No, LG makes good stuff. I think one of the things we worry about with them a little bit is supporting next generation Android rollouts as they come. And there's varying degrees of success with that. I mean, let's face it, Samsung isn't exactly Johnny on the spot sometimes with that stuff. Depending on your carrier, LG, you know, they're kind of up and down with that as well. OnePlus, I'll be honest with you, I've been impressed with them. I've already got 9 Pi on a OnePlus 6 right here. It just came down. That's good stuff. But yeah, I mean, LG makes good stuff. So versus the Galaxy Note 9, what are your thoughts? If you're not a big pen person.
If you're not a big pen person, I say check it out. It probably won't have the same battery life of the Note 9, but it's smaller, thinner, lighter. The design is attractive. It's also cheaper than a Note 9, though it's still pricey. It's a $900 to $980, depending on the carrier. So if you're not going to use the stylus and you want a large format phone and you're considering a Note 9, I say look at it because you might like it. But then if you like this and you want to save some money, you might as well look at a Galaxy S9 Plus. So you really have to experience it. I think overall, it's a beautiful phone, really nice phone. I think anybody that gets one is going to like it. It's a, you know, it's a flagship through and through. It's just not like a class leader in any one particular category.
How about camera performance versus Note 9?
See, the camera, I like it, right? So the flexibility of the triple camera is really cool. I have some sample shots in the review of I took of my puppy, where with those three cameras, you can really see how the composition is different and you can grab a different shot really easily. And then in terms of quality, the shots are very low noise, really sharp. I took a couple of photos of like stuffed animals with really thin fur, and you can make out the individual strands. If anything, they're a little muted. Like the colors don't pop. I know you like that pop, and that's like Samsung's known for that really pop of color on their Super AMOLED displays. And that's what their pictures look like on their phones. It just looks more realistic and muted on here. It's good. It's just, you're not going to look at it and go, wow, look at those colors, because I think it's really real world, you know, out of this phone.
And you can always ramp saturation after the fact.
Yeah, you could tweak it all you want too. Full manual mode is available. It's just those auto shots aren't going to make you go, damn, look at those colors, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's something to be said for that. Some folks like the extra saturation that Samsung phones bring. Some folks like the accuracy of Google Pixel phones. Pixel 2 especially has been hailed for its accuracy, and maybe that's a little bit more what this is like. So interesting stuff. Check it out. The LG V40 Thin Q just went live on review at hothardware.com. Marco's full detailed deep dive is up there. Let's close out quick here, because we're running to the bottom of the hour for our 1 hour slot. And we're gonna talk about real quick what we've got on the bench, or what we want on the bench. What's in your wallet? What's on your bench? I'm gonna show you what I've got going on here. And this is actually a very interesting device. This is the Lenovo X1 Extreme. So think X1 Carbon, but in a 15-inch format. Let me see if I can get it into the frame a little bit more. Think X1 Carbon in a 15-inch format. So same design signature as an X1 Carbon, a little bit thinner bezel all around, 15.6-inch 4K display is what I'm looking at here. 8th-gen, 6-core, Coffee Lake under the hood, and NVIDIA GeForce GTX 1050 Ti graphics. As well as, I believe, a pretty large battery, and it can get up to 64 gigs of RAM. This is a 16 gig configuration, if I'm not mistaken. I have to look at it, but I just got it in hot off the press. The ThinkPad X1 Extreme. I don't know, man, this thing it's well under 5 pounds. And like my daily driver is a ThinkPad X1 Carbon. And that machine is, I think it's well under, a little bit under 3 pounds, but that's a 14-inch machine. This thing, I'm really liking the format. It's a little bit larger, and I was thinking 15-inch. I don't know, man, but this thing is, it's thin, and it's light, and it's got every I/O port you could ever want in a notebook. It's got an SD card slot, a full size SD card slot. Certainly USB 3, 3.1, multiple USB-Cs, HDMI, it's got that's a network port and a headphone jack. Anyways, it's really set up for the road warrior and as a serious workhorse with serious horsepower and the ability to have some gaming if you want, gaming graphics on the go. I'm psyched to look at this. This is the Lenovo ThinkPad Extreme.
So
there you go.
So I just want to call you on the having every I/O port you could possibly want in a notebook, because I've got the hottest technology right here. It's a thing. It's called a floppy drive.
Oh yeah, baby.
Nice. You know, PS2 ports.
Oh hell yeah!
We've got parallel and serial here. This is the Toshiba Satellite 1850C from the beautiful far-off future year of 1993. But that's not all, because I also have
Oh my God. Like if you wanted to, it could be a blunt instrument to beat somebody with too. It's so heavy.
That's where we're going here because one floppy drive is not enough. So we also have the ZFL which has not one.
Oh yeah.
But two floppy drives.
Wow.
That I want to retrobrite that thing so badly.
I know. So yeah, these now, are the... some treasures that. I found from my new job place. There's quite a backlog of technology.
Look at that. Can you boot that thing? Will it power up?
They both power up. I need to get some disks to actually install DOS or whatever I please on them. So I do want to point out this one is monochrome, but the Toshiba satellite does have a a passive TFT matrix display. Wow. So
wow. Look at those keycaps, Marco. You're jonesing, baby.
Right?
I want to retrobrite that Zenith machine so badly. The yellowing was upsetting me.
Chris, yeah, we will get
that
there.
That Zenith machine is hot. We need that. Can show me that Zenith machine again. And then we'll let the people go.
I sense an April Fool's review coming up.
Oh, God. Right. That is...
There you go. And it's just happy God, to see
you. Awesome. Double barrel, 3.5 inch, popping right up.
Your contrast and brightness controls right there. I mean, no digging through on-screen menus. It's right accessible. And John will have to find out if it can run Crysis.
Yeah. If you posted pictures of that in the vintage PC forum on Facebook, you'd get mauled.
we need to do something with that machine right there. You hang on to that, Chris. Yeah.
Another interesting fact about the Zenith is they reverse the polarity of the power supply. So you do want to be careful with whatever power brick you're putting into this because it is, again, reverse polarity. You don't want to fry it.
Wow. Okay. Hey, that's good stuff. The Zenith, what is it? The
Zenith ZFL 181-93 and the Toshiba Satellite T1850C.
Wow. Wow. That's beautiful stuff. Thank you for sharing that retro. Marco, real quick, and then we got to sign off. What do you got? Anything?
Two things that we can't talk about yet. The most exciting thing I have on the way that I'm interested in checking out, I have a Radeon Pro WX8200 on the way. So we get to run some updated Pro graphics tests on the new test bed. So that should be fun.
Neat. So stick around in the weeks ahead to hothardware.com where you might see cutting edge graphics. You might see cutting edge smartphones and next generation laptops, or you might see a gloriously retro computer with dual 3.5 inch pop-up floppy drives like Chris has. That's, you know, and the envy of everybody, clearly, right?
You can't beat it.
that is a beautiful thing. I got a little misty looking at that. Hey, but make sure you check us out at hothardware.com where you'll find us around the web, youtube.com/hothardware, where we hope you will thumb up and subscribe and hit the reminder bell so that you know when we go streaming and we're live here at the 2.5 Geeks webcast, excuse me, where we are every day at every Wednesday at 5:30. That is our time slot where we like to show up here and try and entertain you folks. Twitter.com/hothardware where you can tweet us and facebook.com/hothardware as well. Anything else to add before we say goodbye, guys?
No, I think we're good. We covered a lot of stuff. Everybody have a good night. Make sure you like and subscribe. See you next week.
Double barrel floppies for the win. Thanks for stopping by.